Welcome everybody to the Magic Beans podcast. We're back again for episode number 4. I am your host and my name is Shorty. I'm joined tonight by a full bag of beans. We have the whole lot of them here. We'll say good day to them all. We'll start off with Blaster Boy. Scott, how are you going?
Hey, not too bad.
That's away. We have Chewy.
G'day all.
G'day Chewy. Cracker. Cracker's back again.
Evening, chaps.
Hello. And of course we have Chris.
G'day.
How's it going, fellas? You glad to be back again?
Awesome.
Loving it. Yep.
Yeah, good to be here. Missed last week, so nice to be back.
We missed you, Chris.
Good.
We missed you.
You're always
feeling
missed.
The love.
No, we're pretty excited to be back again, and now we're actually out there live on in the wild world. The podcast is up on all the places that you get your podcast from, so I'm sure you've found it on those places if you're listening to this right now. But yeah, it was pretty exciting week for us. We'd recorded our first few episodes and yeah, finally got to put them out there this week, and it's good to see that people are actually listening. So thank you to everybody out there who's listened already. And if this is your first time listening to us, then make sure you go back and check out the first few episodes we've done. We do go through a bit of our background and things like that, so it'll give you a bit of an idea of who we are and where we're coming from and all those sorts of things. So tonight, as we do most weeks, we're going to kick it off with our Blaster Watch. We'll have a quick catch-up with Scott and see what he's been up to. So, Scott, let us know how's it going as the resident noob on the cast. How are you going with your playing of Magic this week?
Well, I've had a very productive fortnight. I've managed to get myself up to Gold Tier 3 at this stage.
Yeah!
And, nice work. Well done.
I was pretty happy with that. And I've got to say, it was pretty much a red deck that got me there.
of course.
I want to give a quick shout out before I talk about the deck to Chewy that actually did a YouTube channel on it just a couple of days ago, I think it was, where he actually played the deck. And he actually, I think he tweaked the deck a bit as well. And so I've stolen some of his ideas from that tweaking, and now I'm playing with that new version of the deck. But basically, it all works around it's the Cavalcade of Calamity, I think it's called.
That's the one.
Yep, that's the one, the enchantment, the one and a red enchantment that fires off damage every time you attack with a one-power creature.
Yeah, one-power creature. And it works really well with, like, Chandra Spitfires and Legion War Bosses, those sorts of things. So if you can get them out pretty early and get a couple of those tokens out as well as Chandra, I think it's Chandra Acolyte of Flame.
Yeah,
if you can get her out as well and get two of her tokens out, then you've got fireballs going off everywhere. So I think I've talked about this deck before in a previous podcast, but now it's been tweaked a lot and I'm really getting used to the way it feels when I'm playing it. I know exactly what cards are going to work well if I get them in the initial draw. And I also know now if I get certain cards at the draw, I'm going to lose. So I really sort of rely on getting that cavalcade, at least one Cavalcade of Calamity in the first draw, along with a couple of 1/1s. If I can get those out, because they've got haste as well, then I know I'm going to have a pretty good game.
I can echo that. Definitely, I can definitely echo that. When I played the deck on Arena and recorded it, check out the YouTube channel for that. I played 7 rounds, and in the 2 rounds that I didn't draw Cavalcade, they were the rounds I lost. But I had some close games, but then I had some turn 4 kills with the... what's the name? Is it the Chandra Spitfire, the 1/3?
Yeah, the Spitfire.
Yeah, that with Cavalcade and Chandra herself. If you drop the turn 1/1 drop, turn 2 Cavalcade, turn 3 that card, turn 4 play Chandra, you're attacking for, it's a 10 power flyer and it can win the game on its own there. It's pretty amazing.
What does Spitfire do?
It's a 1/1 that when it attacks, it deals 1 damage to either the player or planeswalker that it's attacking.
So no.
What is the Spitfire?
The Chandra Spitfire is a 1/3.
Wrong card.
Yeah, there's 2 Spitfires.
We can cut that bit out of the podcast, can't we?
No.
Sorts of things.
Because I'm teaching you something. So just listen, youngster. but basically it's a 1/3, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chewy, but every time a 1/1 creature or an opponent's hit by a one spell.
No, it is. Whenever your opponent is dealt non-combat damage.
Non-combat damage.
It gets
plus three, plus zero.
Yep. So when you attack with the 1/1 that pings when you attack, plus cavalcade, you know, it gets plus, you know, becomes a 4/3, 7/3, 10/3 flyer attacking on turn four.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
And so then, it triggers itself as well?
It triggers itself with cavalcade. So if you've got a cavalcade out, you attack with it, it's a 4/3. If and then for every other one power creature that attacks alongside it, it's a +3/+0 on that creature.
Nice.
And the added bonus to that deck is the Legion War Boss, which is one of the things that I think Chewy put into the deck, which I then copied. It also puts out a 1/1 token, but at the start of the turn, but then when it attacks, it also gives mentor to another creature as well. So you just get so much power going on in these initial attacks. It's just amazing watching all this stuff go off.
And it starts to steamroll quite a bit and
very quickly,
the damage adds up very, very quickly. I actually played a few rounds of that deck myself this week, and yeah, sometimes you have those games where it's just like, yeah, turn four, you're just absolutely owning them. But I did also find you have the other games where you don't draw the cavalcade and they kill your first couple of creatures and you just do absolutely nothing, which is can be fairly common for the mono red decks, and that's why the sort of the main mono red deck that's been really popular in the format for the last couple of years now almost, but the decks that are running Experimental Frenzy, they have that long-term game plan as well where, yep, they run out of cards and then all of a sudden they top deck a Experimental Frenzy and all of a sudden they're back in the game and they're just playing cards off the top of the library and, yeah, winning those games that were pretty much done. So,
yeah,
and it's pretty cool deck.
I think this deck is more explosive. This deck's more explosive than the regular mono red deck, but it does have that weakness. I agree.
My experience is that you're like, come on, Frenzy, one time, and then you hit a Firebrand, and you're like, oh, what am I going to do with this 1/1 that pings? This is useless.
Yeah.
Or I hit Frenzy, I'm like, come on, spells. Nope, four mountains in a row. It's like, oh, God, bless.
We've all had those games.
Yes, that is true.
I must admit, it's very satisfying, though, when you get a concede after turn three from the opponent, and that happens a lot.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah, it's a very good feeling. So the only negative about all that is when you're trying to build up, you know, like if you've got a quest for that week is to get 25 land cards out and you can't do it because people keep conceding on you all the time. So it's very, very selfish of the other player, I must say. But it's a hard loss. It is. Apart from that, though, I did a draft as well. I don't know if I talked about that last
week. Yeah, I think you did talk about that last week.
Oh, did I? So then I haven't done a draft. Forget that. apart from that, the only other thing I've been working on now, I've completed my mastery tree for the newbie mastery tree.
Oh, yeah, the beginner's one. Yep.
Yeah, and I'm now grinding my way through the core set mastery tree and got myself up to, I think, 22, 23 now.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. Our plan for the next upcoming episode is to dive a little bit deeper on Arena and getting into that and how the economy works on there and the mastery tree and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, we'll have a bit of a chat about that next week and see how you're going. But, yeah, it's good to hear you're having some success with the deck and you're learning how to tinker with a deck as well. And you know, one of the things that all of us on the other rest of us on the podcast we do a lot is you build a deck or you find a deck list or whatever, but you're constantly looking at other people's deck lists. You know, you go on MTG Goldfish or Star City Games and look at the deck lists that other people are running and pick up little edges by finding those random cards. Chewy and I actually had a good example of that from the recent MCQ. We were both playing mono red and we'd found a list where someone was running the, what's it called, Mizzium Tank?
Yeah, the tank is the truth.
In the sideboard. Yeah, and we'd been having a lot of trouble with the Jeskai Planeswalkers matchup that was quite popular at that time. And yeah, that sideboard card just completely turned that matchup around. So
yeah, I think we both beat...
It's worthwhile.
We both beat that matchup during that tournament where we couldn't get a game against it in the lead up playing on Arena.
Leading up to it. Yeah. It's definitely a good idea, Scott. Have a look at what other people are doing and then try those things in your deck. And you also find the more you play this play with that deck, the more you'll learn those small interactions and those small lines of play and those sorts of things. There's definitely something to be said about sticking with a deck and learning how to play it really well. Can go a very long way. So
it's very more cool. of a natural feel now. So just playing it, I just sort of you get to know how the game's going to go from usually the first or second turn. So
yeah, good.
Which is good because, you know, a couple of weeks ago I would have had no idea. So
yep, good to see where.
Have you found the other matchups, Scott? Do you enter a game playing this deck? Your opponent plays a turn one forest and you go, great, easy win. Like, are you finding certain matchups better than others?
Yeah, usually if I'm... The only ones where I still have trouble with is the white decks because of the lifelinks that the players usually have. And I know that if I can't get out and get aggressive very early on against those decks, then I'm going to lose because it's only a matter of time before they start building them up. The other one I have noticed I had a bit of problem with is probably the green decks. And again, if I get a bad draw... And I give them time to start building up their creatures because you know something big's coming because they're putting out land all the time but not much else. And so I'm expecting a big creature or something big to pop out. They're the ones where I feel that I have the biggest amount of problems with.
So the decks that are putting pressure on the board where you can't attack through, they're the ones that you tend to struggle
with. Yeah, they're the ones I tend to struggle with. The lightning, is it...
Lightning Strike.
Lightning Bolt. Lightning Strike, that comes in handy. Keep that in reserve and... Every now and then, at the early part of the game, they'll put out a couple of 1/1s or 1/2s, and you know straight away you can kill that. But yeah, I'm finding it's just a good deck to overall to play with.
I think it's a really good deck to play best of one ladder with because you get a lot of games in, and it's quite fast to kill your opponents, and it wins a lot of games. Like I went, 5-2, and I think that's probably where the where you would expect to be with that deck. You get a lot of free wins.
If you're interested in playing this deck, then definitely go and check out the YouTube channel. As we said, Chewy has run it through a few games, so I'm sure he'll have the deck list up on there. And if we can, we will put it in the show notes for this episode as well and give it a crack, have a bit of a play with it. It's a pretty cheap, easy deck to build on Arena. Have a bit of fun with it and then, give us some feedback. Let us know what you think of it.
Well, that's it from Blaster Watch.
Awesome.
Cool. So this week we're going to start the first of our recurring segments. These will be something that crop up on a regular basis. We'll sort of rotate through them over the episodes, but the first few we'll start with is going to be on generic magic terms or magic terminology. So these are things that you'll hear either us talking about or, people on other podcasts or people at your local game store. And they're terms that are used as a bit of a baseline for describing cards and things like that. So the first one Chewy's going to get into, he's going to give us a bit of a rundown on that. So do you want to get into that for us, Chewy?
Yeah, absolutely. So I thought I would start at the start of Magic. So whenever there's a new card that comes out when we... a new set gets previewed or what have you, we look at the cards and you go, oh, it's a 2-mana 2/2. And you'll hear a lot of people refer to that as a bear, anything that's a 2-mana 2/2, whether it's one and a green or double blue, as we discussed in the pre-show. That comes from a card that was printed right back in Alpha called Grizzly Bears. So anything that is that mana cost, a 2-mana for a 2/2, these days, because, there's been a lot more cards printed and Magic's a lot more powerful these days, 2-mana 2/2s tend to have abilities. There was a one out of Modern Horizons that, was effectively a Stony Silence. No activated abilities of artifacts could happen. So that's sort of the fundamental. If you talk to anyone who's been playing Magic for any given time, you go, oh, yeah, that's a bear. They'll know what you're talking about. And similarly, a 3-mana 2/2 is a grey ogre. And again, right back to Alpha. And that is a one red and 2-mana for a 2/2 generic creature. So anything that's a 3-mana 2/2, Gutter Snipe as an example, or Fulminator Mage for Joel out of your modern deck is a grey ogre by this definition. And will stop at 4 mana, but a 4 mana 3-3 being a hill giant. So, yeah, just when you're, you know, if you're new to the game or not familiar with the terms and you're listening to other podcasts, talking to people in your local game store or like your regular play group or at a tournament, someone says, oh, that, yeah, that thing's a grizzly bear, then I guess, yeah, this is what this sort of segment, each cast will touch on something else. This is what we're looking to address. So those common terms, that jargon, that lingo, where there's, you know, something that you need to learn pretty, it's a pretty steep learning curve with some of the more complex things, but one of the things that comes up regularly in Magic and, you know, Magic players don't even realize they're doing it oftentimes, but it can be confusing for new players. So
yeah, if you talk to any of our wives, they'll say that when we get together, all of us, they think that we're talking a whole nother language, which basically we are. I mean, we're talking a Magic language, and we're using terms that only people who play Magic would understand or use in sort of normal sentences. But they're terms that have a certain meaning that if you know those terms, they can go a long way to sort of help you shortcut a few things.
Yeah, so we'll start with those, you know, these simple ones. And as we move along, we'll get, you know, more and more complex with the terms. And we will, yeah, hopefully, you know, we create that sort of library and people can learn as they listen, which is great.
It's all right, boys. There's only 25 years of history to catch everyone up on, so we'll be... We got our work cut out for us.
So is it going to take us 25 years?
Something like that. One thing quickly about that is the reason people use these terms is it's just a heuristic, right? It's a shortcut. So if you know that someone says that's a bear, you immediately know it's a 2-2, right? And so because Magic is so complex, it lets you save mental space without having to remember all 25,000 cards or whatever they are that have been printed, that there are like 100 that are 2-mana 2-2s. And you're like, cool. I don't need to remember every one. I just know it's a bear.
Yeah,
and
so that's why these terms get used.
Exactly. Like, the rest of it is irrelevant and it might have, like, some pump ability or some, you know, other effect. But it's just about saving mental space for, like, how to do the really complex stuff.
Yeah, so we've got a whole list of terms like that, terms that are sort of commonly used in the Magic world, and we'll be slowly making our way through those in the upcoming episodes. But if you think of any that you want us to have a talk about, then yeah, just hit us up on Twitter or send us an email, and we'll get to those on one of our future podcasts. So that's the first of our recurring segments. I'm sure you'll hear more from that one again soon, so keep an ear out from that. And that's going to take us on now to our main topic. So it's obviously been mentioned a few times so far in our first few episodes that we all live busy lives. We've all got jobs and families and all that sort of stuff that keep us pretty busy, but we obviously want to try and find time to play Magic. So we thought we'd sort of go through how we go about that. Hopefully you can sort of learn from our experiences and get a few pointers in ways that you can fit Magic into your life a little bit better or a little bit easier, or at least, you know, sort of stay in touch with what's going on in the world of Magic and in the metagames and you know, online and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, we'll run you through a few topics and hopefully you can get something from our experiences. So anybody want to jump in with a tip for our listeners?
Yeah, I'll jump in if I guess one of the obvious things, you know, getting out of the house and getting to a tournament is often really hard. But, you know, we've had Magic online for quite a long time, and that was a way to kind of scratch your Magic itch and get in the extra practice for tournaments. But it was dry. It wasn't an enjoyable play experience. But, you know, with the introduction of Magic Arena, online play is both, you know, scratches the itch, it's constructive in that it lets you prepare for tournaments, and it's also fun. You know, it's a much more enjoyable play experience. So for me, the biggest one, and probably for a lot of people, it's actually, you know, getting games on Arena. As Shorty mentioned a few minutes ago, he can, you know, play a couple of times a week at night and get that magic itch scratched, which is great.
Yeah, I've definitely found Arena to be quite helpful for me, and sort of one of the things that I've found to be really useful, and a tip that I'd like to give, is it's great to try and develop a habit, and Arena's really good for that. If you can get into a routine of consistently playing, for me that's been a case of get home from work, dinner, get the kids ready for bed, get the kids in bed, and then basically as soon as they're in bed, sit down and play 20 minutes, half an hour of Arena. It's great. And when you've got, you know, decks like Scott loves with the mono red, you can smash out a whole bunch of games really quickly. I know of other people who do a similar thing, but they'll do it in the morning. Get up, get ready for work, and then before they actually leave for work, get 20 minutes in or half an hour of play. And just that regular, consistent play very quickly becomes a habit. It becomes the thing that you do. That's what a habit is. It's the thing that you're doing all the time. It's kind of like going to the gym. Yeah, you go to the gym and you might go every day for 6 months or something like that. And then as soon as something comes and interrupts that habit, you don't go for 6 years in my case. So if you can develop a habit and then stick with it, then it works really well. And it's very easy to fit small chunks like that into your life without really sort of messing things up too much. I know, Scott, you've mentioned that you're a gamer, you play a lot of other games. How are you finding fitting in Magic now with all the rest of the games and things that you're doing?
Well, I'm pretty lucky. Compared to you guys, I don't have kids. So I don't have that sort of, you know, sort of closing in on me as well and ruining any time I've got. And my wife is a raider. So for those that don't know, raiding is just something you do in World of Warcraft or an MMO. And she does that 3 nights a week. So that means that basically Monday, Wednesday and tonight she'll be raiding. So tonight is obviously podcast night. But when she's raiding, that's when I spend most of my time playing Magic. So I can easily get in at least 2 or 3 nights a week of just playing while she's playing. And the two of us sit next to each other. So we sort of have that little
spending quality time together.
Yeah, we're spending quality time with headsets on and our backs to each other. But we're in the same room. So that's the important thing. And I hear her raging all the time throughout her raid, whereas she hears me raging at the opponents I'm up against. But I find that it works well for me, and it is now, it's definitely becoming a habit, because I can now play Arena while she's raiding, and then on weekends as well. So I'm probably a bad example, because like I said, I don't have the kids, I don't have any sort of all the other things that could affect my time playing. So I'm probably lucky in that sense. Whereas, you know, like you guys will probably have a better example of how you actually manipulate and manage your time. So I think I'll chuck it over to Chris, because he might have some ideas.
Yeah, I think the obvious stuff's been said. So jumping on Arena is obviously amazing. Magic Online, not as amazing as Arena, but is okay. But for me, the motivation when there's a tournament or an MCQ, a Mythic Championship qualifier or something coming up, is just to get organized in advance, like I think Shorty was saying. So, you know, block out time, block out nights, you know, set up a bit of a routine so that you can get on and play. Outside of Arena, though, I like getting a lot more, or I get a lot more value out of being able to play in person. It's obviously a lot harder to coordinate that, but whenever we can make it work, if we can organize a night to catch up and play in person, a bit more targeted, some more targeted matches where you can really drill down on things like sideboard plans and stuff like that, I get a lot more value out of. So I really enjoy trying to squeeze that in, where we can, hopefully get a night, you know, prior, sit down, have a chat through decks, selections, sideboarding, what we're seeing, what we think is likely going to be a good showing at whatever tournament we're playing in. And that helps me to really get prepared and in the zone outside of, the regular kind of Arena grind. So,
yeah, For sure. One of the things that we were lucky enough to do this year was, for my birthday, my wife said, hey, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to play Magic. And so, most of the guys here, actually, we took the day off and...
Good day.
We drafted some... It was a great day. We drafted some Pauper Cube. Shorty's got a Pauper Cube, which was gas. And also some Eternal Masters, which was...
Yeah, it was awesome.
Bananas. So, it was pretty... Like, that's a... like a once a year kind of thing where everyone just goes, hey, I've got some annual leave and stuff up and we can all kind of make it work. But the other thing that we've been managing to do a little bit in the last year or so is all of our kids are friends now, right? Because we see each other so regularly. So it's become less of a problem to kind of go, hey, we're going to, like, Chris is having a barbecue, so we'll go and all our kids will entertain themselves with each other and then we'll just disappear and play Magic for a little bit. And so they're around and we're still involved with them, but it's nice to be able to kind of carve out a Saturday here and there where, you know, you're still with your family, you're still doing stuff, but they get to play. And look, my kids don't want to play with me, right?
No, they do not.
Want to play with Shorty's kids because they're, you know, yeah, they're similar ages and they just, like, get on really well. So that's been really lucky that we can kind of do that and turn it into a social gathering. Like, all our wives get on really well, so it kind of becomes, if it's not I'm leaving the house by myself to go do this singular hobby with no one else is involved, and I turn, it becomes this event where we can go, hey, we're all going to catch up and hang out and spend a day doing stuff at someone's house, then it becomes less of a burden, right? And that's the last thing that I want to do to my family, is have this hobby of mine become like a problem, that they don't feel like they can interact with me or that I'm gone all the time and stuff. And like, I would love to go grind tournaments and play, you know, FMs all the time and stuff like that, but it's just not practical because, you know, I have responsibilities as a father and a husband. So it's sweet that we can you know, just kind of mix all that together and you know, jam some games in between.
Absolutely. And like, to take that a little bit further, it my wife is a pretty understanding one, and she knows that, you know, we've got responsibilities at home, also, you know, work at least 50 hours of the week, if not more. So she understands that playing Magic is a release for me, and playing Magic with my friends is you know, what I is one of the things that, you know, if I could do anything, you know, as you know, we will take days off to do it. It's something that I prioritize with my free time. So we've made that easier by having kids and wives that all get along and make it a social gathering. But even when it is a tournament coming up, it might be a Mythic Championship qualifier, it might be a Grand Prix in another city, my wife understands that it's something that's important to me. It's something that I really enjoy doing. And she also knows that, you know, if I do well at a tournament, you know, if I meet or exceed my expectations at a tournament, you know, I get a real buzz out of that, and she enjoys, you know, seeing me happy, right? So contrary to popular truth, so she yeah, it's I guess for people that have partners out there that kind of don't get it, you know, my wife is she, you know, she'll kill me for saying this, but she's also a nerd, but a closet nerd, we'll call her. Yes. So she knows that, you know, she understands the game and she understands why it's important to me. So, yeah, for anybody out there who might be, you know, might have a partner that doesn't get it, that rather than trying to explain to them, you know, what a grizzly bear is, try to, you know, tell them why it's important to you, and what drives you, and because that's what worked for me. Might not work for you, but it's worth a shot. It also helps that if you're doing it with people that, you know, your partner also enjoys spending time with as well.
Yeah, having an understanding partner is a key, I reckon. I mean, that's where I'm very lucky, because my wife is a total nerd and a total gamer, and we both are. So it just works out perfectly for us. And yeah, she's enjoying Magic even more now just by listening to our podcast. So that's a win.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If they don't get it and they don't understand why you like Magic, then get them to listen to this podcast. Like, even my wife, who's definitely not interested in playing Magic, she adamantly refuses to play, not interested at all. She's been listening to the podcast, and yeah, she's slowly sort of starting to understand why we like Magic, why we like this game.
We'll break her down. We'll break her down.
Yeah, I don't like your chances.
See, my wife has been setting up the Magic Widows Club, as she calls it. Which is just when they all get together, because we all disappear. It's like we're dead.
Yeah, I think my wife's on the board of that as well.
Yeah, I think so. Founding members.
Yeah, yeah. It is funny though, because my wife is completely like, yeah, not in a nerd camp at all. Like, just doesn't understand gamers and Magic and any of that stuff. But like Chewy said, fully appreciates and respects that it's like a release and something that I really love doing. I get a lot of enjoyment out of, and so really respects that. And so I get a lot of support on that front. So that really helps a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And not everyone out there is in the same boat as us. And you know, we definitely understand that you might have plenty of time to play Magic, but one thing that you do need to be careful of, and I'm sure that Chewy would definitely echo this sentiment, is you do need to have a balance in your life, and spending time doing other things and hanging out with other people, people who don't play Magic, is a big part of that as well. Although I don't know why you'd want to hang out with people who don't play Magic, but anyway.
Are you suggesting that cardboard crack is addictive?
It might be.
Exactly. But yeah, Shorty's definitely on the money there, I think. I mentioned in my Magic Origins episode one of this podcast, I certainly took it too far at a point, and you know, I had to scale it back, and I think now I've found the balance quite well, although I am recording a podcast where she's trying to get kids to bed, so we'll see how she feels about the balance. But it is, you know, the balance is different for everybody in every different circumstance. You know, when before I had kids, before I was married, you know, you just have more time, and you know, you could still play online on the nights at home and things like that, but you could get out to those tournaments. And we had a habit, to, you know, riff off Shorty's point a little bit, a little while ago, where we went to our local and played Modern on a Thursday night, and you know, we got there, you know, 2 maybe 3 weeks of every month, and it was really fun. You know, it was a really good group of you know, regular players there, and you know, we got to hang out together. It was actually really fun. So you know, it was a there was a its own little metagame that developed, and you kind of go, oh, you know, Jomon might be there with his Jeskai control deck, so I better bring in, you know, this sideboard card. And yeah, it was actually a really enjoyable little puzzle to solve in itself.
Yeah, it's definitely good when you can play regularly. One of the things I wanted to mention that is that for us, the limiting factor is mostly family or work, really. But for you, it could be something completely different. So most people are going to have some sort of limiting factor, whether it be work or school or family or whatever other commitments you've got in your life. So everything that we're talking about now, that that applies to that as well. So, you know, you could be working all day and have school at night and be studying or whatever, or vice versa, where you're at high school or uni during the day, all day, and then to earn a bit of money, you've got to work evening jobs and weekends and those sorts of things. So it all applies in the same way. But if you love Magic the way that we do, then it's really great if you can carve out some time to play a bit of Magic, or at least be involved in it somehow, you know, through podcasts or whatever other ways you can find to be involved in the game. And it's also going to help improve the other parts of your life. So there's nothing worse than just working all day, coming home, having dinner, going to bed, and just doing the same thing every day, day in, day out, that sort of thing. And, you know, you're not getting that fix, you know, as we mentioned, the cardboard crack fix.
You need a release.
Yeah, we mentioned it tonight that you need a release, and you know, you need a break from the normal things that you do. So it's just a chance for you to do something different to school or work or whatever you've been doing, just a chance to put your mind in a different frame set. So and you know, it also, you're using different parts of your brain, you know, problem solving and all that sort of stuff. So it's good for helping to keep your sanity and that sort of stuff. So anyone else got anything they want to mention?
I've just got, again, I'll expand on what you've just said there, Shorty. It's a release and an escape. One of the things that I know you do as someone who spends so long each day in the car traveling, and I've got less of a travel, but yeah, the consuming content in your downtime. So you might be catching the train to work or to school or on the bus or riding your bike or however you get from A to B. It's a great opportunity to, you know, to listen to magic content. You know, podcasts are the obvious one. Hopefully you're listening to this one on, you know, shout out everyone who's listening to this on the train. Whilst I'm driving in the car, I've got a short commute, so I get, you know, maybe two podcasts, three if I'm lucky, in per week. But for those that are in transit for, you know, an hour each way, you know, you can get two podcast episodes in, you know, getting, you know, two work and then another one from work. So that lets you stay in touch. It lets you be, you know, still feel involved with the game, and also consume that information that, you know, you're not getting because you're not getting that chance to play. You're still getting those deck and metagame updates. You're keeping your finger on the pulse, which is really good.
Yeah, the other thing is for me is I watch a lot of YouTube, right? Like I can't remember the last time I voluntarily turned on commercial television, because why would you want to watch ads? And I watch a lot of like just people who either stream stuff or put up videos on YouTube, and I have unequivocally improved my game from having watched pros and listened to them talk through their lines and stuff. So it's like, it's not as good as playing Magic yourself, but at the same time, you don't end up in those kind of loops where you're just playing through the same patterns and autopiloting. Like everyone's done it, where you sit down, you go, oh, I'm going to play some Arena, and you queue up against something and you're playing and you go, wait, what did I do in the last four turns, right? And like, it's really good to kind of just get a different perspective, because, you know, I can't have Reed Duke sitting over my shoulder telling me what I'm doing wrong, but I can watch him talk through his lines on like a Channel 5 video or something like that. So, you know, I have learned a lot from that, and it also means I can just pause, right? So if I got to go deal with a kid, then like, who cares? Like you just walk away. So yeah, that's a really big resource that I have used, and podcasts as well. Obviously, we're not biased at all.
You know. Yeah, you should definitely watch our YouTube videos and listen to our podcast, as you're already doing.
I have played with Chewy over my shoulder. It didn't help.
Far too many puns. Yeah.
Yes.
So bad.
I know some people are lucky enough, and I've definitely seen a few photos of somebody on this podcast, who we won't name, who during their work hours are doing work, in air quotes, while watching Twitch streams or YouTube content. May have been guilty of that myself a few times. But if you're lucky enough to be able to do this yourself, you know, if you work a desk job where you're in the office all day and your office environment's a little bit more relaxed where you can have something on in the background, then yeah, why not just you know, put some Twitch streams on or watch a bit of YouTube content, that sort of thing, have that on in the background, and you know, you may not get everything out of it because you should be doing your work at the same time, but you're going to get a fair bit out of it, and it's going to sort of keep you in the loop and sort of help you to know what's going on. And that's what I find. Yeah, as Chewy mentioned, I spend hours a day in the car as part of my job. I spend about an hour and a half driving to where I'm working most days, and the same coming home, plus a couple of hours in the middle of the day going to various jobs and that sort of thing as well. So I listen to a lot of podcasts. I consume a huge amount of podcasts every week, and it just helps to, yeah, keep me in the loop and keep me up to date with what's going on and learn a few things. So yeah, we don't get out to tournaments regularly as much as we would like, but by consuming the various sort of avenues of content that are out there. It can help to keep you up to date and sort of keep you on top of your game and that sort of stuff. And yeah, really, it's just about making the most out of the time that you have, that the time where it's effectively just dead time. Like for me, the time that I'm in the car, it's literally just dead time. So why not make the most out of it and improve my game and learn a bit of something while I'm stuck in traffic and that sort of stuff. So, yeah. Any other pointers out there?
Does anyone watch Twitch or have a preferred Twitch channel that they watch or a player?
Yeah, I tune into the general Magic channel and check out what's going on there. But I don't specifically follow that many streamers. But yeah, I'm kind of similar to Cracker. There's some really good content that I find just straight off the main Magic Twitch page from pros, and you learn heaps from that stuff. I think that's one of my favorite content.
I really love
for sure.
When they have the bigger events, like a Mythic Championship, or even when they have video coverage of the Grand Prix. I enjoy having that on if I'm around on the weekend. If I'm just doing housework or whatever, I'll put that on. And we were lucky enough a couple of years ago now, we had a pro tour before they were called Mythic Championships in Sydney in Australia, and so it was on live. We actually normally we have to stay up really late to watch things live. Yeah, so you just watch the replay or you watch it on YouTube. But it was the one where they had the Emrakul and Liliana, Shadows of Innistrad. Yeah, that was right. And so they had a bit so we've all seen the trailer for War of the Spark where Chandra's fighting Nicol Bolas. But so before that, Liliana's fighting Nicol Bolas. There was sort of one of the less impressive animations with Liliana raising a bunch of zombies and fighting Emrakul. And my daughter was 3 at the time. And, it came on at sort of each segment, that thing. And she's like, look, Lily. And then she'd do this Emrakul and like wiggle her fingers like there was a tentacle thing and go, little, little, little. It was super cute. So, having that stuff on is great. And even now, like a couple of years later, she still does it. So, yeah, sorry. Random anecdotes from Chewy, but having the Twitch on for those major events is good. The production's getting better and better. The arena tournaments are really impressive. So yeah, Twitch is something that we're probably consuming more and more, and will consume more as there's more live coverage of events, whether it's the official Magic ones or Star City Games and such. So it's actually really fantastic.
Yeah, I think there's pretty much a Twitch stream on pretty much every day, and especially on the weekend, whether it's Star City or Channel Fireball doing a GP or just the weekly MPL play.
I think it's esports as well has really pushed everybody across all the genres to get better and better at what they're doing. And I think Wizards are just falling into line and think, okay, well, we need to start producing some really good content now.
Well, and some of the Magic streamers are now getting picked up by like big sponsors. So there's a guy called Numot the Nummy who's sponsored by TSM, right? There's a guy called Caleb Durwood who's sponsored by Tempo Storm and Red Bull.
Well, so, Red Bull had the Untapped event, right? Just this last weekend.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Yep. So there's some like real legitimate interest these days, and Arena has kicked off that in a big way. But, these guys have been streaming for a long time, and they're all really entertaining. So you can kind of find either, like, just grinders kind of going at it on, like, the SCG Tour, which is interesting in its own right with its own kind of metagame breakdown. Or you can find dudes doing, like, stipulation cube drafts and stuff like that. And there's just, like, nonsense in there interacting with chat. So there's a lot out there, which is really sweet. You can kind of find whatever you want.
Yeah, there's pretty much content for everybody. So, whether you actually want to sit there and learn the ins and outs of a deck and how to sort of go play by play, or you just want, a Twitch stream on in the background, there's always something on, something you can find. So whenever you've got any spare time, you're just sitting on the couch doing nothing, just grab your phone out or your iPad or whatever and put on a stream or jump onto YouTube, and there's always something you can find and always something you can be learning from it. So the other part to that is getting out to tournaments. So most of the sort of bigger tournaments, they're usually held on the weekend, so Saturday, Sundays, that sort of thing, which for us on the podcast, the weekends are usually consumed with, you know, doing things with the kids. You know, kids have sports and swimming and things like that, or we're doing things with the family and that sort of stuff. So getting out to a tournament on a weekend is quite hard. And most local game stores will have midweek tournaments, and they'll usually run Friday Night Magic or F&M. But they'll usually have, you know, Tuesday night they'll do Standard, Thursday night they'll do Modern, and you know, we had a period of time, as we mentioned previously, that we were able to get out for a couple of months, or nearly every second week, every second Thursday sort of thing, to go and play Modern at Ringwood. But if you've got that capability, then great, lock it in, pick a night of the week and just go, look, this is the night I'm going out to play Magic, and sort of get out there and get it done and keep in touch with your local scene, that sort of thing. But for the bigger events that that you're going to want to play on the weekends, well, the key that we found is planning ahead. So, you know, if you know you've got in a few weeks' time a bigger event, like for us, we have an MCQ coming up in about a month's time that most of us will be wanting to get to, we need to plan ahead for that. So, you know, I have a shared calendar with my wife. I put an event in there and she gets a notification that I've got an event coming up. So that makes it easy for me. And then when she's planning stuff for that weekend, she can see that it's already in the calendar. So, you know, if you've got a similar system, put it up on the fridge or whatever it is, but look ahead to what's coming up and what events you're going to want to get to, and make an effort to be able to get to those events and plan that in advance. And the same thing applies for work and that sort of stuff. So if you know there's a big tournament coming up you want to get to in 4 weeks' time, well, tell your boss now that in 4 weeks' time I need that Saturday off because I'm going to go and play Magic.
Or you just, with your significant other, you can start accruing those brownie points that means that you can actually get there, right?
So how do we accrue them again?
Washing dishes is probably the best place to start, right? Yeah.
Can someone let me know when you work it out?
Yeah, maybe one of our wives who are listening to this podcast could let us know.
Exactly.
It's funny though, because the tournament can help justify
the practice,
the time that you commit prior. Like often I'll be like, well, I don't want to waste it. I don't get to these things often, so I want to make the most of it. Therefore, I need to make sure I'm prepared. I need to get the most out of it. Otherwise, it's just a waste. Like, I want to give it my best and do really, really well. But to do that, I need to prepare. So, like, often that forms my justification.
Chris, you're giving away the secrets.
Okay. Luckily, my wife doesn't. No, my wife will listen to this. But
yeah, that's exactly right. So, like, if you've got a bigger tournament that you've planned ahead for, that you know is coming up, then that sort of helps justify all the things in between. You know, like Chris said, you've got this big tournament, you haven't played one in a while, you want to make sure you actually do well. So like for us, we have this MCQ coming up in about a month. Literally the last tournament we played in was the previous MCQ over a month ago, other than, you know, pre-release in between, which means it gives you a little bit more leeway to go, well, look, I've got this coming up in a few weeks. I need to do some practice between now and then. And it sort of helps you personally commit to actually preparing and getting ready for that upcoming tournament, making sure that you're putting in the work you need to so that you do well at that tournament. So, yeah, having a goal and setting that in advance is definitely another good thing to help you make sure that you're getting some time in and setting some time aside to actually play some Magic. And the same applies for bigger events, you know, like GPs and those sorts of things. The schedules for those come out about 6 months in advance, so there's no reason why you can't look at those and schedule ahead and start setting aside money and booking accommodation and flights and those sorts of things. And yeah, just sort of plan a little bit further ahead for those types of things, and hopefully you're not unlucky like Chewy and I were last year with going to Singapore. We'd planned for our good trip over to Singapore, family holiday, and finish it off with a GP, but yeah, unfortunately it didn't quite work out that way when they pushed the GP back a week later.
Oh no.
Savage.
It was still a good trip.
Yeah, it definitely was, yeah. I think that's pretty much all of my tips. So anybody else got anything else left to wrap them up?
No. I think that's, yeah, I think we covered everything pretty well there. If anybody out there listening has any tips that they, you know, they use and or have used in the past that they think might be helpful for anybody else listening, you know, shoot us through a message on Twitter or send us an email or hit us up on Facebook, because we're always looking for extra tips ourselves and we'd love to share them with the wider Magic community as well, because if we can get more people playing Magic, then, you know, that's, I guess, the goal, right?
Yep, very good. So the next thing that's coming up is a Mythic Championship next weekend, June 26th to 28th, I believe it is, in Barcelona. And the format for this one is going to be Modern, and Modern is a pretty wide format. It's very much you can play almost whatever deck you want, pick your flavor and away you go. So yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting to see how the pros go with this one. Yeah, we've got the London Mulligan rule as well that's going to make an effect on the tournament most likely. So yeah, it should be pretty cool to watch that and see what's going on, see what the pros are playing, that sort of thing. So yeah, the Mythic Championships are pretty much the highest level of tournament that we have these days. They used to be called Pro Tours and they changed them not that long ago, and I'm pretty sure somebody on this cast went to Pro Tour. Is that right? Maybe not.
Yeah, last time I mentioned it, I got ridiculed. So no, we're all.
I don't think I heard about that one.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. So we're not going to go into it too deep on this episode, but yeah, we will touch on it on our next episode. We'll have a bit of a talk about who won and what the top decks were and the best performers and all that sort of stuff. Maybe a little bit of a metagame breakdown. But for now, we're just going to do a little bit of a round table and we'll just grab everyone's predictions. You know, what deck do you think is going to be able to take this tournament down? So, Cracker, do you want to give us your prediction?
Well, so the first thing to mention is the banning recently of Bridge from Below, right? And obviously everyone was playing that in the Hogak deck, which was completely busted. So I think people are going to cheat on Graveyard Hate because they're sleeping on Dredge again. And I reckon that Dredge might put up some big numbers this coming weekend. I reckon that, you know, everyone's taking out their Leyline of the Voids and surgical extractions and all that kind of stuff. And that's when Graveyard-based decks just... They just sneak up on people, right? They come from a different axis, and if you're not ready for it, they can just run through a field without any problems. So they're quite resilient. I'm not biased towards graveyard decks at all. They're just my favorite thing to do in Magic.
Yeah, no bias at all towards graveyard decks.
None
there.
Whatsoever. The day that...
Actually, I think Dredge won a tournament in the last couple of weeks, maybe?
Yeah, probably. And then, you know, I think there's kind of an expectation that Modern might fall back to what it was like beforehand, but I hope we see some spice, man. Like, as much as I think Dredge is a bit of a sleeper to some degree, I really hope we see some new things coming out of all of these sweet new
cards. I think the cards from Modern Horizons will definitely have an impact. I don't know if they'll spawn any new decks. As such, like, there'll be maybe improvements on old decks and updated lists. But my my prediction for this upcoming one is actually a little bit of a – I didn't plan this, Joel, honest – a bit of a counter to your prediction. I think Tron will put up a good showing because it's got that really powerful engine with Khan the Great Creator and Mycosynth Lattice. So Scott, you might not know about that combo. Khan, the new Planeswalker from War of the Spark, has a static ability that says activated abilities of artifacts can't be played. And Mycosynth Lattice is a 6-mana artifact that says all permanents in play are artifacts. So basically you lock your opponent out. I think that so it's a, you know, got that sort of combo lock piece. I think it's got a relatively good Dredge matchup, especially if they maintain some number of Relic of Progenitus in the main board. It's a good cantrip. It works well with the deck. They've also got Ugin the Spirit Dragon, which just exiles Dredge's board. So I think it's a really interesting matchup, and I think they could put up some really good results because if a deck that is well represented, especially at the top tables, it has good game against, as well as being able to lock out large portions of the format, and just being, you know, an inherently super powerful turn three combo deck, it can be it can be a real force. That's me. I'm on Team Tron.
I'm going to chime in. I reckon I think my pick would be Phoenix. Is it Phoenix? So I think Is It Phoenix has been posting up really solid results prior to Modern Horizons, and post Modern Horizons, it's been doing really, really well as well. So Is It Phoenix works really well when it can leverage the graveyard. It's also now got a whole heap of play with the new card Aria of Flames from Modern Horizons, which allows it to just go off without having any reliance on the graveyard at all.
And what is Aria of Flame?
Three mana enchantment, two and a red, I think it is, when it comes into play. I don't have it in front of me. When it comes into play, your opponent gains 10 life, and then every time you play an instant or sorcery, or it could be any spell, you put a counter on it, and then for each counter, it deals a damage, I think, every time you play the spell.
Yeah, it's equal to the counters on it. So
I think it's a break even of six.
You can negate that pretty quickly by just burning them out, or you can actually respond to the life gain trigger and just cast a bunch of spells then and just get them before they even get to gain the life.
Yeah, I think it's like... four counters, and that negates the 10. And then after that, you're dealing full-on damage. And obviously, if any of those spells are burn spells, like if you're playing a Lightning Bolt, for instance, that deals 3 damage, then if that's one of your spells, you're going to be churning through the damage a lot quicker. But I think aside from all those, all the new tech, Is It Phoenix is just a really, really solid deck. It rewards people who play really, really well. And I think at a Pro Tour or a Mythic Championship where there's high levels of play, and you've got some of the best players in the world being able to pilot that kind of deck, they're going to be able to leverage that to its highest capacity. So, yeah, I think that's where it sits. For a little bit of a hedge, I think Humans is good. It's a bit of a pet deck of mine. Humans, I think, always has some game. So, interesting to see how that goes too.
Plays lots of Grizzly Bears.
Love the Grizzly Bears.
Yeah, it certainly does. But I think I'm going to have to go with Chris on this one. I think that the Blue-Red Phoenix deck is going to be the deck to come out on top. It was already proving that it's a top deck even in the Hogak format that we've been playing in for the last month or so. It was still performing really well. And now that that deck has had a card banned out of it and it's sort of been neutered a little bit, I think that's going to take over as the top deck. It's really resilient. I've played quite a bit of that deck myself, although I haven't played the Aria of Flame version just yet. But that's kind of taken it to another level, and I'm definitely looking forward to that. I'm pretty sure that's going to be my top runner for the deck that I will play for the MCQ coming up in about a month. It's a really great deck. You barely have to mulligan with it because your cards just draw more cards. So I could definitely see that one taking it down again in the hands of a really experienced pilot. But who knows? We could see something completely random. You just never know with Modern. That's the good thing about the format. So Scott, with all your experience in the Modern format, which you have basically zero, but with the research you've been doing and all your metagame examinations, what's your pick for this weekend? Have you got any idea at all?
Yeah, the experience I've got in this is quite intense. I hope you're ready for this. I have no experience whatsoever, and everything that you guys all just said then went right over my head. But I am actually looking forward to just seeing some games being played and what other people are doing, and hopefully I'll be able to take something out of that and learn from that. So it'll just make a nice change from what I'm used to playing.
Modern is a very deep format. Like I said earlier, there's a lot of decks you can play, so the coverage is usually pretty cool. You get to see a lot of different things on camera, and the coverage teams usually do a pretty good job of showcasing those oddball decks that people like to play and things like that, especially in the earlier sorts of rounds. So I'd definitely keep an eye out for that. And they will be drafting Modern Horizons as well, so that'll be pretty cool to see. So that's kicking off on the weekend of the 26th, 27th and 8th, the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So keep an eye out for that on the Twitch streams and check it out. I think for the rest of us on this cast, we'll be definitely paying close attention to what happens in that tournament. I think it's usually a good indicator of where the metagame's going to go and what decks other people are going to be playing. So that'll help us determine what we're likely to play for the upcoming MCQ. So we'll be having a bit of a chat about that over the next couple of weeks, how we're going with our testing and planning and deciding on decks and all that sort of stuff. We'll have a bit of a deep dive on that and give you a bit more information, hopefully give you a little bit of guidance for any local players out there on what they might like to play for the MCQ that's coming up. So that's pretty much going to wrap us up for tonight and for this episode. So thank you very much for listening, whether you're a returning listener or a new listener. Yeah, we really appreciate it. It's pretty exciting, as we said earlier, to have this podcast out there and know that people are actually listening to it. And it's not just our wives and family members. We do know that other people are listening, which is, yeah, it's pretty cool, pretty exciting. I think we're all pretty stoked about that. So, yeah, stay tuned for some more episodes coming up in the next few weeks. But yeah, we would really appreciate it if you could spread the word. Yeah, like we said, we're coming from Melbourne, Australia. We don't have high ranking pros on our podcast, so our exposure is quite limited. So yeah, spread the word, share the podcast, and get the word out there, and then yeah, keep an eye out for us in your local area in the upcoming weeks. So that's about it from us. If you need to find us, or you want to get a hold of us or get in touch with us, then you can find us on Twitter. So we are at MagicBeansCast. You can send us an email, magicbeanscast@gmail.com. You'll find us on Facebook, facebook.com/MagicBeansCast. And then, of course, make sure you look up the YouTube channel and you'll find Chewy on there with a few videos. So, yeah, that's pretty much it for us. Thank you again for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Thanks all.
See ya.
See you guys.